Liz Fosslien is an author and illustrator in California. Her writing's been featured in The Economist, The Financial Times, and on National Public Radio in America. And with Molly West Duffy, she has written a book that's caught the attention of people confused by modern workplace etiquette. It's called No Hard Feelings, The Secret Power of Embracing Emotion at Work. It's humorous, but also makes illustrative points. We know that giving hugs, for example, is a difficult area to negotiate now. For most people, the behaviour guidelines seem to be much as they've always been, but with extra caution applied. Liz Fosslien, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. You tell us in this book, well, there are issues, great and small, really, but how to tiptoe through the minefield of delicate modern issues in the office, like unanswered emails and who you can follow on social media, and does that include your boss? But more importantly, most importantly, the theme is how you can bring your whole self to work each day, which a lot of people feel unable to do, Liz.
Yes, so the book is focused especially on emotions at work, so how we feel, and a big part of that is research shows that when we're able to bring our full selves to work, when we feel safe taking small risks, asking questions, flagging problems, when we feel we can do those things without any backlash, that's actually when we succeed as people, as teams, we're more innovative, we're more likely to stay at the companies where we work, and we're happier.
We're expected to be authentic, in inverted commas, but not too authentic. In other words, the cynical voice inside says we're expected to be acceptably authentic. And actually, you think there's nothing really wrong with that.
No, I mean, I think what happens often is that when people hear this call to be authentic in the workplace, they think that means that they have to share a lot. And actually, being authentic to yourself might be that you're not so willing to share everything about your private life, and that's fine too. Really healthy workplaces are inclusive for every kind of person. I do think, however, especially if you're a leader, that you do have to walk this line between sharing and oversharing. So there's research that shows that if leaders kind of share too much, or if you speak just to say, like, I'm so anxious, I'm really getting bogged down by all the work I have to do, by all the responsibility on my shoulders, as a leader, disclosing that much can actually undermine yourself and change how people see you and if they actually believe in your ability to lead them somewhere.
As you say, we've always had to suppress emotions at work. That's nothing new. But in the modern workplace, which emotions do you keep and which do you discard? That's a difficult decision for people, Liz.
Yes, definitely. So some emotions are just noise and they have nothing to do with kind of the decision or situation at hand. And some are really useful. So noise, for example, is you've been sitting in traffic for 2 hours. It's an especially horrible commute. You come into the office, you're irritated, you're frustrated. Everyone seems very annoying to you that morning. They seem probably annoying because you're still frustrated about the traffic, not necessarily because they're doing anything out of the ordinary. And so in that moment, it's really important to kind of reflect on how you're feeling and say to yourself, I just need 5 minutes to have my cup of coffee, to sit down, and then put those feelings of anger and frustration to the side because I don't want them to kind of influence how I behave the rest of the day at the office. Really useful emotion, and one that, so I really love this one because I think it's very often stigmatized, and that is the feeling of envy. So when we are jealous of someone, it's important not to do all kinds of mental gymnastics to convince ourselves we're not jealous. So if you're envious of someone in the workplace, it's usually because they're doing a really great job, they're in a position that you would like to be in, or they just have the kind of career that you want. And so thinking about why you're envious, what they have that you want, can help you kind of change your direction or make decisions in the future to help you get into a place that's more similar to them.
And also you can be envious because they are, in fact, governing and revealing their emotions better and doing that whole EQ thing better than you are. I think that's quite common too.
Definitely, yeah. I think it's we feel so much better when we can be ourselves at the office, when we have an idea and aren't immediately plagued by these thoughts of, should I share this idea? Will it sound stupid? How do I need to frame this? Does anyone care? When we just say the idea without all of that kind of internal dialogue, feels great. And so when you see someone else doing that, it's natural to feel jealous of that ability.
Your 7 new rules of emotion at work. I wonder if we can go through them. Be less passionate about your job. How do you do that and be the best that you can be? Because some people don't care much. Some care far too much. Most people are in between. How do you do that, Liz?
Yeah, so one quick thing to point out is that when we say be less passionate about your job, we're not saying don't be passionate at all. It's wonderful to have a job that you like, that brings a lot of meaning into your life. But what I see, I live in San Francisco. There's a lot of tech companies where people are encouraged to see their coworkers as family and to just live and breathe work. And when you do that, you often stop caring about your personal relationships, your hobbies, these things that bring you meaning outside of work. And when you're too wrapped up in your job, you actually do a disservice to yourself. So if you get critical feedback, that feels especially bad because you don't have any other sources of self-worth in your life. And lots of research shows that when we work too much, our productivity goes down, we put ourselves at risk of burnout, and we're just unhappy. One thing that I love to do is actually block time off on my calendar. And so I block time off in the afternoons for just focused work. I think too many of us are in too many meetings and then you don't have any time to get work done. And so I've heard many of my friends say, I'm so glad tomorrow's Saturday because I can finally do some work. And you need the weekend. The weekend, it shouldn't be a crazy idea that we just, how about we take Saturdays and don't do work? That should be the normal, not a revelatory idea. And then another thing is just to get comfortable with being rigorously unproductive. So don't mathematize all of your hobbies. It's so easy now to track how many steps you've taken and then want to take more steps in faster time. Just start to really enjoy taking a bath, reading a good book, taking those breaks that you actually really need to show up at work and do a good job.
I'll get to this question earlier than I had intended. All of this, of course, is predicated on our professional lives being governed by competent, sympathetic managers, and plenty of people often tell you, don't they, through life, probably with a degree of truth, that the layers of management above them work them too hard, make them feel futile. Mm. Lack of clear direction, all those things that can lead to a confusing set of messages about what they're expected to do. So Your book, in some ways, should primarily be a management manual, because unless management can tolerate those kinds of self-help initiatives that you're trying to put in place, it can sometimes feel hopeless.
Yes, it's difficult. And one thing that we hear a lot, too, is I don't feel like there's clear direction or I understand where my manager's priorities lie. And so one thing you can do there is it's really useful. Often your managers also don't even know how much work you're doing or how long it takes to do what you do every day. So what you can do is you can write down everything that you have on your to-do list for the upcoming week and then go to your manager and say, here's how I've prioritized my tasks. Can we just make sure that we're aligned or that I'm doing what you also agree is most important? And so that's, you're not coming to your manager saying, I have no idea what to do. You're actually showing them how much you're doing. And then it's much easier for them to go through it with you and say, yes, do like A, B, but do D in front of C. And then you can also feel better about going home at 5, about taking those breaks if you know that your manager thinks you're doing a good job and you're aligned on what is important that I do first.
Inspire yourself.
Yes. So this is about one thing I think everyone has felt at some point in their career is they've just felt stuck or uninspired. And I think often it's easy to say, I just need a new job. And definitely, if you are miserable every single day and you've tried a bunch of different things to combat that, it might be time to quit and find a new job. That said, a few things you can do to see if you can inspire yourself are, one, really view your current job as an opportunity to learn. And that might be within your team. You can also just go grab coffee with someone who's not on your team and see what they're doing. There might be opportunities to move around within your organization, but you'll never know about that if you're not reaching out to people and learning what they do. One thing I've done too is done a skill swap. So that was, I asked one of my coworkers, can we block off a half hour one afternoon and I will teach you something that I know how to do. And then the next half hour, you will teach me what you know how to do. And so just the more skills you acquire, you're also going to be able to get a better job in your next role.
Your feelings aren't facts.
I will start this one with a story. So a few years ago, I was working at a company and we hired this new employee. And I realized pretty quickly that every time I asked him a question, when he would answer, he would start speaking very slowly and over enunciate each word. And this drove me crazy. I thought that I was a moron and I was just so frustrated with him. And so a few weeks later, the team went out for drinks and dinner and he and I were having a really good conversation. And so without malice, I just asked him, hey, do you realize that when I ask you questions, you slow down when you answer? And he immediately looked at me and said, oh, I'm really working on that, but I'm just afraid that I'm going to look stupid in front of you. And so I'm choosing my words really carefully. And so it was the exact opposite of what I thought. So I had been so angry at him for weeks based on a completely incorrect assumption. So this idea that our feelings aren't facts, it's really so often when we have a strong emotional reaction, we're reacting to this idea that we haven't bothered to fact check. And so it's so important to show up to conversations, especially difficult conversations, being calm, speaking about your emotions without getting emotional, and then giving the other person a chance to share their perspective before immediately jumping to conclusions.
I know, we jump to so many and we make so many mistakes with first impressions and but also ongoing assumptions about other people. And that is so true. All right, emotional culture cascades from you.
Yeah, so this is emotional culture is essentially it boils down to how you feel when you enter a space. And how you feel, it's based on these really small things that we do for each other and to each other. And so I think when we talk about culture, people often assume it has to start at the top, when in fact, there's many things that whether you're a new employee, a manager, or a leader, small things you can do that have a big difference. You know, when I share these, people say like, oh, this is such basic stuff. And yet people get it wrong all the time. So simple things like, you know, learn to pronounce people's names correctly. If you never know how to pronounce someone's name, you're not going to refer to them by name. And then that feels really bad for the other person. Spell their names correctly. If you see someone get cut off in a conversation, once the interrupter has finished, maybe say, hey, I noticed you were saying something. Do you want to finish your thought? When someone comes into a conversation, taking a moment to pause and say, hey, this is what we're talking about. Just want to fill you in, and then continuing the discussion. So again, just being mindful of whether people have information, how they're feeling, if they're getting a chance to speak. These small moments are so crucial in making everyone around you feel good at work.
By the way, what do Americans say when they forget people's names? I think we try in New Zealand to do a version of saying, oh, g'day, mate, and and try and apply it to women and men as best we can. What do Americans do? Do they have a word?
I can't think of a word. I think we just rigorously try to avoid having to say the other person's name.
Yeah, we know that.
Distinctly know it at networking events. I always feel so great when someone else joins and I'm like, oh, and then I watch them introduce each other and I'm like, okay, really, you got to remember the name this time.
The last of the seven new rules, and I'll just mention it briefly because I'm going to come back to it. Be selectively vulnerable. All right. Questions off the back of those. There is such emphasis, isn't there, Liz, in the modern workplace on what some people regard as facile teamwork, bogus enthusiasm, make-believe, joy. I mean, a decent percentage of the human species consists of people who are cynics and melancholics, and they are often creative and productive. They just care in their own way. Would you agree that it's become more difficult for people like that to find a place in the modern workplace, and how should they go about implementing your rules and your ideas?
That's a really interesting question. So one thing I'll say is that I want to push back against, especially in the US, there's this focus on everyone needs to be positive at work. And work is to suffer sometimes. Even if you have a job you love, there are going to be bad days. And so I think it's really important to normalize the fact that work is hard sometimes. You have to show up when you don't want to. You have to do tasks that you don't love. And so if you have a bad day, number one, that shouldn't be stigmatized. And number two, you should just not feel bad about feeling bad. One nice rule I like to encourage teams to implement is the colon suggestion. So you're allowed to dissent, you're allowed to criticize as much as you want, but for every piece of criticism, you have to add colon suggestion. I don't fully agree with that idea, colon, here's how I would improve upon it.
Right. Okay. One really interesting idea of yours is to replace microaggressions with microactions. Now, what do you mean by that precisely?
Yeah, so microactions are these small gestures that we make that have a big impact on how other people feel in the workplace. So bringing someone a cup of coffee, saying thank you for the cup of coffee, celebrating birthdays, just these small moments of showing that you care about someone, that you've taken the time to think about how your actions impact them. Those are micro actions. So they're these small things that help the other person feel a little better that day.
I had a guest recently talking about bonding through self-revelation. In other words, showing emotion. Special forces apparently trust one another and, like your Marines, I guess, and have each other's backs because of a certain degree of admission of weakness and display of emotion. They sit around the campfire and they open up to each other. In a sense, this is what you're advocating, isn't it? You're advocating a version of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just trying to show people that we are all human. The scientific research shows that we are evolved to have emotion regardless of circumstance. And so the idea that you can ever check your feelings at the door is biologically impossible. And so having a little more understanding that everyone has emotions, everyone has bad days and good days. One thing we get asked a lot is, I'm on board. I think we should discuss emotion more at work. How do I even start? And to your guest's point, I think that it starts with just building personal relationships, and then it becomes easier to have conversations about work. So gathering people together for lunch, one thing organizations do that I'm a big proponent of is just randomly assigning people to have lunch together one day. So it's about getting to know different colleagues a little bit more than the ones you always talk to. And so really, whatever you can do to facilitate the personal relationship.
These are good techniques, obviously. But in terms of the internal dialogue that we all have with ourselves and definitely try and hide from other people, you advise reframing anxiety as excitement, which is a useful idea. I see it espoused a bit now, or worry as motivation. From your experience, how easy is this to do? Because you've been in a dark place, which I'll get to in a minute. How easy is this to do?
Yeah, so it's not super easy. I think this is one of the tips where people say, yeah, that sounds great, but how do I actually do it? But I do think as much as you can, it's worthwhile. So your body responds to stress or anxiety. It has the same physiological response as it does to excitement. So your heart beats faster, your palms start to sweat. So if you can, just look in the mirror and say, I'm not excited, or I'm not anxious, I'm excited. You actually, research shows that you can perform better because you're using all of these bodily reactions in a positive way. A quick mental reframe that can be valuable is just to say, instead of I have to do this, so I have to do this public speaking event, I have to do this presentation, seeing it as an opportunity and saying I get to do this. And this is a chance for me to showcase my skills and do my best. That said, so my dad lives in Chicago in the US. It's a very cold place. And he has now started texting me every morning. I get to shovel the snow off the driveway again.
That's
so
good.
You know, it doesn't apply to everything, but I think as much as possible, trying to push yourself to channel that anxiety in a productive way is valuable.
Okay. There'll be people listening to you who say, it's okay for Liz. She speaks so well. I'm not gregarious like her. I'm no good at reaching out in the office. I'm shy. I'm awkward. I'd like to go back to earlier in your career when you faced the dilemma of being really unhappy at work and ended up taking a job at Starbucks. You left without a backup plan, ended up taking a job at Starbucks. Have you had to learn all this stuff yourself?
Yes, 100%. I very much operated, I studied economics and I think grew up in a very stoic household. And so I was always kind of implicitly taught, don't show your feelings. And especially at work, you just put your head down, you deal with whatever comes, but you never talk about your feelings. And if you are having an anxious day or you're sad, just tough it out. So my first job out of college, I tried to do that and was working extremely long hours and really neglected my life outside of work. And so my unhappiness actually manifested as I was starting to have severe migraines. And so it became clear that it was unsustainable for me to stay at this job. The book is based on that experience. And looking back, I think there were things I could have done to not end up in that situation. And some of those things are just like practicing self-care, feeling okay about taking time off. I remember I just felt so guilty about even asking for vacation. And again, just making sure not to drop all my friends, not to skip the gym. There are things that you should prioritize because they will help you stay healthy and actually be able to do good work over a long period of time.
It is a very interesting book. You know, there was the old wisdom at the from the Oracle at Delphi, know thyself. What you are espousing, am I right, is that better processing of what you feel, which is quite a process in itself, but better processing of what you feel lets you bring an emotional self to work, but your best self as well.
Yes, exactly. So we talk a lot in the book about such an important part of being an effective employee is being able to speak about your emotions without getting emotional. So there's this common advice, never go to bed angry. And I just want to put it out there, always go to bed angry. Sometimes you just haven't slept, you're tired, there's something unrelated to the situation. Giving yourself the time and the space to think about your feelings, hold them up to the light, and then come back to them is important.
Speaking of going to bed, you advise proofreading for emotion before you hit send with your emails. In fact, better still, maybe come back to them the next day before you send them. And that saves many of us from grievous diplomatic errors, I think.
Yeah, definitely. With really important emails, too, I've started writing a draft and then sending it to myself so that I can really experience what it's like to get that email and open it. I have a tendency to just prioritize efficiency. And so I hammer out these emails that are just like bullet point lists of everything that needs to change. And they feel really bad to receive because it's just like, here's wrong, here's what needs to change. And so now I've started understanding, and especially once I sent that email to myself, I remember being like, wow, this feels horrible. I need to add in all the things I'm not explicitly stating, which is, I appreciate all the work you've done, here's what's good, and maybe then getting to the edits.
I know you have to sell the book, but your emotional tendencies assessment, I think, is up online, isn't it, without even having to buy the book?
Yes. So it's at Liz and Molly, and that's L-I-Z, the word and, then Molly is spelled M-O-L-L-I-E.com. And we have assess your emotional tendencies. So are you overly expressive? Are you an under-emoter? What should you do based on those tendencies? People can assess if they're practicing enough self-care, whether they feel belonging in their organization. So there's a wide variety of assessments they can take.
Liz, great to talk to you. Great of you to give us your time and a lot of wisdom in your book. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was a great conversation.
Liz Fosslien, and the book is No Hard Feelings, The Secret Power of Embracing Emotion at Work.